You are listening to BensTorah.com.
The sugya of what considered death according to halacha many years ago in the 1960s, 1970s, when there was a desire to halacha lamasa in the world of secular medicine to try to allow heart transplants to take place. And finally, we keep the legal law. Up until that point in time, if you look in the legal dictionaries of the medical world, death was defined as irreversible cardiac respiratory death. And that's the way the law dictionaries interpret it. The medical world realized that they relied upon that specific interpretation. By the time the heart ultimately and the lungs came to that final combination, termination, the heart in particular had been so beat up because of the trauma of death on that level, but it really wasn't usable sufficiently for a second person, and therefore as a result of that, they searched and they seek for other factors of interpretation of death. There was a Harvard commission that was commissioned to reinterpret an earlier level of death. There was a presidential commission that was given the same mandate. Ultimately, what it came up with was basically lower brain death, which means if you look at a picture I have in the Mount Kamos that you have here out tonight, there is a picture on page number 4 of the brain itself, and the brain could obviously have two parts, the cerebrum, which is how we're going to understand the shiur tonight. That's the part of the brain that basically our thought processes the speech, and our machshava are really in, taken care of. Then we have the cerebellum, that's the way we physically walk here tonight, that basically maintains our balance, the ability to walk, and to obviously move from place to place. And ultimately speaking, we have what's called the last part of the brain, which we call the medulla of the brainstem, that has multiple parts. You can see in the little on the left-hand side, the brainstem, thalamus, hypothalamus, pituitary glands, midbrain, pons, medulla. So that specific part of the brainstem, is what they finally define that crucial organ that really is in charge of the automatic vegetative functions of a human being's functionality that runs the system below. And if that part of the brain system is no longer functioning, it's dead, then quite obviously the person can't be called a coordinated human being anymore. We're not functional as a human being, and therefore brainstem death became the new calibration for death itself. Now, a person could theoretically have a functional brainstem and a dysfunctional cerebrum and cerebellum. Those people usually end up being in a comatose state, the famous Mary and Quinlan case. But the fact of the matter is, in the world of medicine, brainstem death was sufficient. The biggest indicator of brainstem death is the control center that controls the amount of oxygen, the carbon dioxide you have in your body. The specific control center is in the brainstem. So they assume that if I lose my ability to have autonomous respiration, or a ventilator and such, or without that mechanical machinery, there's no way I can breathe. And therefore, if that's the case, if it's maintained automatically by machinery, it's not considered really normal. Human breathing from the body, therefore the brainstem stops functioning, excluding the respiration, and could obviously, if there's no respiration taking place automatically by the body, the body's body doesn't do that function, and therefore what we call respiratory death or brainstem death came into the vernacular of the non-Jewish medical world. And as soon as a person does reach brainstem death, and it's been analyzed, and supposedly we come to the conclusion that's how bad their wounds are, or the sickness is, that they're literally being kept alive by a ventilator doing the breathing for them, they're considered dead. At that juncture, they will basically harvest the heart and the lungs and other organs, considering that person a brain dead person. And that was the alternative interpretation to that of cardiac respiratory death. The only problem is that there isn't any coordinated one type of the detail of the brain that was accepted by every medical center to determine a person's brain death. Another problem is that to show you how faulty the interpretation is, there are medical centers that did actually call a person brain dead. And one of many cases of mistakes that were made was when they usually have a brain dead person who's declared such moved into a room adjacent to the person who's going to be the recipient of the heart. And the rooms next to each other, two different teams of doctors. And it seems for some reason the doctors want to take a 10-15 minute break between they started taking the organs out of the brain dead person to put them into the person who needed the transplant. And all of a sudden, in that 15-minute break, when they came back, the brain dead person all of a sudden was no longer brain dead. So if they didn't take that break, the person would have been killed prematurely. And there are not many horror stories like this we have reported in medical literature itself. So the question that arose at that time by the postkin, is there any source, any makar, for a real 100% brain death of a person who didn't wake up anymore, is there an attire for it in any chazal, and could obviously can we justify that if in fact we don't have the mistake that was made, the person really brain dead, does what we call brain death, what we call brainstem death, or someone that call it respiratory death, is that considered death according to any halachic source that we can give halachic liability? I will tell you, Rabbi Tendler was one of the first to join this club. And later on, you had the other doctors in Eretz Israel that also wanted to conclude with him and basically give him acquiescence that they wanted to agree. And the fact of the matter is that the very day, brainstem death was used as a barometer for extracting hearts and lungs and other organs in the medical world at large. The question is, what was Halacha's reaction to it? So I'm going to give you a reaction tonight. It just so happens there's a sugya in the Sefer Baba Basra, Adab Kuf Membeis, or Membeis, that's going to be part of the presentation tonight. That's why I'm giving this to you tonight. But what I first want to show you, Rabbi Sai, if you turn to page 1, is the source of halachic death that was used up until this point in time. And the source of the page number 1, this specific marker, this specific source, was the makar for the halachic literature. I'll be showing you first before we get to the very quick brain death literature in the Sefer Yoma and in the Sefer Baba Basra. The Gemara tells us on page 1 of a person who was caught under a collapsed building on Shabbos, and the Hebra Hatzalah are trying to figure out, is the person alive, is the person dead? So how do we basically check whether or not the person is still alive and even for Chayashar, for the purpose of being Mechal Shabbos, to extract them from this specific collapse building. So if you look on the page, Rabbi Sai, which says 1b, Tan Rabbanan Ahechem Hu Bodek, how far are you Bodek? So according to the gears we have in the Gemara, it says, I don't know. You check to see if there's any breathing. Yesharim, others say, Aliba Bodek. You check the heart area to see whether or not you can perceive the heart beating anymore. So I will tell you right now that that's the gear source that you have in the printed text of the Gemara. I'm going to show you very short when I show you. When I show you Rashi, that Rashi and Rishon had the reverse gear source, but the gear source they had was your first Bedek Libo, and the Yeshayim was Ad Chotno. You'll see the relevance very shortly. I also want to tell you, move down now in that text, and you go to where it says Rabba is like quotation E, we say Omar Bar Papa. Rab Papa says the machlokas, we will check the pot first, we will check the nose first, machlokas nimata lamala. That's if you find a person's feet sticking out of the rubble. So you want to know how much to excavate from the rubble on the body. So what area do you get to check if the person is still alive or dead before you know what the halacha prescribes? Instead of being dead, you can no longer excavate. You have to have reference to excavation and remove the body first and the concepts of Musa. So how far do you have to search if he's alive or dead? So from the Republic, you want the person feet first. One of them says you check up into the heart area. The other one says you check up until the nose area to check the breathing. If you find the person's head sticking out and the rest of the body is buried under, and you're able to check the nose immediately, as soon as you check the nose and you see there's no longer any breathing taking place, showing it's alright, it's it. Now, let me show you Rashi quickly. The others are into the end of the Sukhya, Mamash 1, 2, 3. If you look at quotation F on the right hand side of the place, so Rashi says, what was the matzav that this specific person who stuck under the rubble, what did they find in the mitzias of their existence as they came on location? So Rashi says, in Domoness, if in fact when they come on location, they see that the person put under the rubble, or the feet first, the head first, they seem to be inanimate. It doesn't seem to be any muscular movement whatsoever of their body, avarna, sticking outside the rubble. So the Rashi said, the first question is, how much do they have to clean away the stones and rubble on top of the body to determine whether they're still alive or dead? Vadas enes. So the Girsa Ad Chotmo, in Ein, he says, Chios the Chotmo. If there's no Chios in the nose area, it's not breathing, Ein Amotziria, Vadai Meis, Vienucho. If the person stops breathing, the assumption is that you undergo cardiac stoppage and you no longer have breathing taking place, that indicates if there's no longer any respiration, there's no longer cardiac function as well. But the Girsa is the crucial one. Pochi Garcini. Amar Papa, Machlokis, Mamad, and Mala. Machlokis, the Tanai. The Ma'ama Ad Liba. The Ma'ama Ad Chotmo. Here you see Rashi's Girsa, and number two is the opposite of what we have. The one Ma'ama says you check up to the heart, you find the person's feet first. The other one says you check up into the nose. That's if you find the Mamad and Mala. So that's the Girsa Rashi had in the text. And he said, Shemotah Derek Magaloso, Tehila, Udodit Vaholach Kalapirosha, the Ma'ama Vulibo, Yesh Lohafkin and Yesh Lohius, a person who can check in the heart whether there is Chios or not. Why? Shemishmaso, the Fekashan, the Mishan of the essence of the person's life giving spirit beats there. And if you see there's no longer any heartbeat taking place, then but obviously that's an indicator that your heart stopped. If you underwent cardiac death, the assumption is that you also underwent respiratory death as well. No, that you don't just stop at the heart area, you excavate up into the nose. The zinnikias nikabalibo, the nikabalibo. Many times, kias will not be nikir in your heart, but it will be nikir in your nose. What does that mean? So I want you to turn the page quickly, Rabbi Yisai. To page number 5. On page number 5, you have the tshuva of the Chacham speak, which is quotation, right under you see number 5 on the right hand side. Those two paragraphs are basically a quotation from the Chacham speak of the 1700s. And what he wants to do is explain the Rashi's interpretation of the sugya, and what does that mean? What is it predicated upon? So if you look in the first paragraph, the top one, he brings down first Kabbalistic theological beliefs of his time. Arab al-Ki, Yitzhak Nuria, who was Ariya Kadesh, Asher Ruach al-Kim Divako, on the right hand side, Hiskel Marshal of Fursi, Lako Ein Shepela, Shehalei Tu Mishkan Nefesh Ha'ahidus. Now this Rabbi's site is an old debate. Going back to the time of early world history, we find it in the time of Aristotle and the other philosophers as the debate. Where is the neshama? Where is the person's neshama? Where is the repository? So most of them held it's contained in the circulatory system, and basically that's where the gam and nefesh is. That's where the actual breathing, the actual neshama takes place when Hashem blew it into you. It goes into your nose and it goes into the circulatory system. He says that Mishkan Nefesh Achina Zuhu Hames Tachorna. That's why the last organ to die is the heart, because the Neshama leaves the heart out of the body. After Misa Skolevar Maratokimaki Rogim. He says, Dibre Pebeisael, he says, and the Kachukasa Hagol Marit, because of the Marit Temples were as well, or the Trani Mishvaka, Sharshim Zohar. This is found in Kabbalistic Jewish literature. That the ultimate Misa Rabbi Zai is when the heart stops beating. That means the Yitzias of the Shema has taken place from the circulatory system. Now, the fact of the matter is, before I go further with the Talmud Sefer, what I want to show you is that the Rishonim who came before the Mukubalim held this, if you look at quotation C on page number 5, the Beit Avakli says, what does it mean to call the Avakar? We love Hashem with the entire heart. Alei Mishkan Nefesh. Because again, you see the Lei Mishkan Nefesh, if you should aim the Harishon with his the first organ that's recognizable in embryonic development after the first 41 days after conception is the circulatory system in the heart. It's the first aim of Yetzirus of Ha'akron Hashayomus. It's the last organ system to God when a person is dead. But called Avery Haguf, Akat Oma Bakal Wabakar, Arega Akron Shel Misa. So this statement of Rabbi Habakir really represents the Ashkafis Arishainim on the topic. It represents the Ashkaf of the Gedole Kabbalah, as is mentioned in the Haggadah of the Kachim Tzvi to the article itself. And therefore, if that's the case, in their mind, the person who suffers cardiac heart death, that means the person's dead. And in those days, Rabbi Isai, without a respirator, you went to cardiac arrest, you went into respiratory arrest almost immediately, because there's nothing to support the breathing once the heart probably stops functioning, giving oxygen into the body itself. Now, with that fact at your fingertips, let's go back now to B, which is the column of the Chacham Tzvi, who interprets our sugya and interprets Rashi. Now, at the same time, you count 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 lines into paragraph B, and you get to, it says, Adarabha Mamasha Rabbi Rashi Zal. He's not quoting Rashi from the Gemara in the second one we just learned. The Ma'ama Balibo Yesh Lahafkin Yesh Kiyos, Shereshwasu Befekashon. That's where the neshama through the beating of the heart is the indicator of the neshama still there. Ma'ama ad chaitma, the other one says you check to the nose. The zinnan ekiya slika belibo. Sometimes you can't check whether the actual heart's still beating. Or at least in those days, they didn't have the instrumentation we have today to detect heartbeat when it comes to a listening mechanism, or they didn't have any machinery to hook a person up to. So if that's the case, they had to rely upon either physical touching the thoracic cavity to see is there any indication of any movement, the body of the gamer in that section. So if in fact there's no hegachis belibo, it could be it's nigger b'chokmo. Shehiska Rashi Mudvarish HaNeshama Nishmana Belay. Once again, the neshama rests in the circulatory system, with the heart but obviously being the great indicator. El Lepamim, Avshe Neshama Vayim Techalev, that sometimes, even though the Neshama might be there, aimed at indicators, if that minor equipment for a bicei, there's no even we didn't even have a stethoscope for him. You can't perceive a heartbeat, and therefore the chutz, matam as rokusha because of the weakness, halegos achavitachos achazer, also laid is basically hidden under the ribs, bones, fats, and other stuff on your chest. And without fancy equipment, you can't see a weak heartbeat. Ain't the feet in this chutz. He says, when it comes to the neshima, you can see whether the heart's functioning, whether that person is still breathing, and that can be seen by the air coming out of the nose. It's called the famous feather test they did those times. The nikaras ko osha lechai, the bavar rog mehe neshima, she'el she'yesh li'es lev, she'men tzachu ruha neshima. It's a bavar ma'og, that the whole purpose of breathing for that is to facilitate the heart's functionality to bring the oxygen into the body to get rid of the carbon dioxide. If that's the case, if you can prove the person has stopped breathing, that means that there's no longer respiration, it means the heart stopped as well. So this is the way I will tell you. Classical poskim weren't the sugya for thousands and thousands of years. The question was, when did we get this definition that the Iker, Mishkan, HaNeshama is belayed and not belayah, besides the fact it's mentioned by Rishon in Kabbalistic literature? So this was a famous question that the Maritz feels. So it was one of the Talmud and Talmidim Mufakim of the Chasam Sofer, asked the Chasam Sofer, based upon a Metzius that happened in the 1700s. We turn back or voice to the English pages, the page number 7, there was a very famous pronouncement of the Duke of Mecklenburg in 1772, in which they were fearful that they were not defining death properly, and they were burying people alive because they stopped to breathe, and they therefore thought the person had died. Well, in fact, they might have gone into a fainting swoon, and without the fainting machine we have today, to bled a person and was dead prematurely. So what they did, according to the decree of the Duke of Mecklenburg, is they kept the body for 72 hours above the ground, hoping that perhaps the person himself might wake up. And in fact, for those who didn't want to keep the body off the ground, they made this, I call this the submarine format of a coffin. If you can imagine a person being placed in the coffin, and on the head of the coffin, there was a tower that was built, and the tower itself, part of the tower, which was an air tower, was allowed to protrude above the ground. At the top of the tower, besides air holes, to allow air to come in, there was a bell, and there was a rope that was tied from the bell on top down to the person's hand, so if they should wake up underground, they'd be able to ring the bell. The bell tolls, and therefore they would call a team of experts to get that person out of that kind of quickly. They wouldn't smother to death, but this is a description of coffins that used to be used in those days. If you wanted to put the body in the ground, this is the fancy coffins that were used by them at that time.
Today they have an app.
Yeah, they have an app for that. That's cute. So they basically speaking, they had this type of contraption. And the Mecklenburg's takana became a major takana in the European continent. And that was in the 1700s, about 100 years or so later on, Maritz Chius saw how popular this became. So he went to the Chasam Sofer, his Rebbe, to ask him, Rebbe, do we have to, since we're so machmir, it comes to Pikuach Nefesh, do we have to be machmir to do this in our performers as well? They bury people in these types of things, to be worried for what the Duke of Mecklenburg and his hearings basically worried about. So that was the question that was posed to the Chasam Sofer. If you turn our place back now to page number 4, or page number 5, forgive me, what you find is that the Chasam Sofer was asked the question, and on the left-hand side of the page we have A, and then you have Aleph, and you have Beis, and you have Gimel, and you have Dalit. You have the tshuva of the Chasam Sofer. The basic answer given by the Chassam Sofer, which you have in quotation Dalit in that quote, which is this paragraph over here, Rabbi Sai, the last paragraph, is Akar Shneka Rutuk Eben Domain. To come across a person, a dead body, who seems to be inanimate as a stone, Domain to Eben, the Enbar shouldn't defeat God, and there's no heartbeat whatsoever that you can detect. And from Akaka Bata Nashima, also you see there's no breathing coming from the nose. Ainwano Eladivre Tarasena Hakadosha Shumes. There's no question that he's there for a dead person, and therefore Layolino, so you can't keep the body above ground anymore. And Matame Kawe Loka Kawe who comes close to that body in that state is High Malchus, what would be Matame himself, etc. So according to the actual Chassam Sofer, the three Simonim Issa is one of number one, Ainbo Defika, there's no cardiac activity, Ainbo Neshima, there's no respiratory activity, the body is inanimate as a stone, it doesn't react to any types of prodding with needles or such to see if there are any muscular movements that indicate any sensitivity even of the nervous system. If you're dead like that, you're dead as dead could be, you're high in chlura. And in the beginning of the tshuva, when he discussed where we learned this from, he says this can come go back to Har Sinai as part of Halacha Moshe Sinai, definition of Perush of Misa according to Chazal. At the end of the day, you think about it for a minute, Rabbi Yisai, death and life is really a metaphysical phenomenon. What we're trying to do is to find physical phenomena in the body on a physical level that will indicate a metaphysical reality of Yitzias and Hashama, and therefore he claims from Har Sinai, go back to the level of Kabbalah Satorah, these are the three Siman and Yisa that we accepted. And what's interesting, Rabbi Sai, in the Black's Law Dictionary in the 1960s, 1970s, which was the major dictionary used by the medical and the legal world to define death, they interpreted before brain death was introduced as basically irreversible cardiac respiratory death, which is exactly identical. It was what the Chassam Sofer claims was death in the Torah world itself. And it's only once the President's Commission came into existence, they introduced the concept, technically speaking, of brain death, which is respiratory death, as an alternative to what our Kabbalahs were up until this point in time. And the question posed, therefore, to the Gedolei HaPoskim is, can brain death, which really indicates respiratory death, can that in actuality be used as an alternative to cardiac respiratory death, which was the Kabbalah we had up until that point in time? That's really, in a nutshell, a very quick overview of the entire debate that was brewing at that specific point in time. What I want to mention to you, if you go back momentarily to page number one, the fact of the matter is, the Chassam Sofer and the Chacham Tzvi and others point out that these three Simanim Misa of Ainbo Defika, Ainbo Neshima, the Toynim Ke'eben, is the way they basically learn the Shita Sarashi, because they point out, as the gear says, you check first the heart and there doesn't seem to be any heartbeat. You check the nose, it doesn't seem to be an aspiration. When the Rashi says, what was the matzah of the body when he came across it? Dogmation and Mesa Barov, that's another word of saying Dominic Ace, it's as inanimate as a stone. There's no any type of nervous system movement whatsoever. So the three Simanisa Amarumis in the actual phraseology and the flow of the Gemara, the way Rashi learns it, the way Bachachim Tzvi says, the Girsa should be.
You are listening to BenStorah.com.
And that one major problem when it comes to the din of brain death is that anybody who's in the hospital who deals with the topic will know that a person who's declared brain death might have a dysfunctional brain and might not walk breathing autonomously because they're now on a respirator, a ventilator that's doing the breathing for them, but at the same time they don't have autonomous respiration. It's mechanically being done for them. They do have autonomous heartbeat, the circulation is still going, the heart is still functioning. So what if the Simani Misa is not actually dysfunctional the way our tradition had it? So the question is, how do you view that existence, of cardiac existence, is still functioning, and that's why 98 or 99% of the development would take a list of development dealt with the topic at that time, basically said, the only thing you've proven with respiratory death or brain death is that the respiratory system has become dysfunctional, but at the end of the day, the cardiac and the circulatory system is still functional. So one of the Simani Nisa is basically Halach Lamasa still functioning. So how can we declare the person dead? That's why, by and large, they rejected brain death as brain death. I'm talking at Halach Lamasa, 99% of person today, because they felt it doesn't suffice for the criteria of the Gemara Yoma, the way that the Chasam Sofer interpreted to the Maariv Tzvius, the way the Chacham Tzvi learned the sugi itself, and the way that the Rishonim seem to indicate that what happens in the lathe is the ultimate determination. That's where the ultimate seat of Shem takes place. If the heart's still functioning with the circulatory system, dysfunctionality of the breathing system does not indicate it's his neshama, and the person is not halachically dead. Now, but obviously speaking, Rabbi Isai, if we stop the shir over here, it would seem to be interesting, but the fact you don't understand why there was a rejection, that Rabbi Teller, my dear friend, came into the picture, and he wanted to give Allah justification medically to brain death, what did he rely on? So there's a Mishnah of Resh, and that was takes us to the second part of the shir, and that is a Mishnah of Sechus Olos. So the Mishnah talks about how death can be determined as well. So it says in the Mishnah at the end of the page, on page number one, Mishnah of Adam the page. It says, Adam ein matama acha takes a nasha. A person does not become tamei nes until the neshama has left the body. No matter how wounded they might be, they might be crucified, they might be cut up, they might be dosed some more of a patient who's going to die within the next 72 hours. Nevertheless, he's still alive enough to dissolve the Kulibam, the Potam, and Aibam if he gives a get. He can still mach of the Tchum if he's a Kohen, and Kosam and Tchumma. The Chayim, the Hema, the Chayim, the Matamim, Ad Shetek Tenasha. We have to totally Tzias and Nefesh for animals and human beings to die. Now, the crucial factor is the next two lines. Kutaz Roshayem, when you have a decapitation taking place by human beings, heads have been cut off, decapitated, even though you might see muscular movements in other parts of the body, even after the decapitation has taken place, metamin, basically speaking, they are tame. These spontaneous muscle spasms that take place after your head's been detached are luckily innocuous, and they compare it to those Zonav Shalatah, Shina Fachesas, kids in camps used to take like lizards. They used to play games to cut off the tail of the lizard. The tail used to move around as light as detached. So therefore, that's not the point of spontaneous muscle spasm, but that's not an indication of a coordinated human or a coordinated animal of a live human being or a live animal, and how luckily it's irrelevant. And therefore, what do we see from here? So when a person undergoes full-fledged decapitation, any muscle movements after that possibly are irrelevant, they mean nothing, and the animal or the human being are dead. Comes along Rabbi Tendler. Rabbi Tendler says, what do we see? That we now have a very interesting source that death can also be accomplished by the severance of the head physically of the body, and any spasmic movements of any other part of the body afterwards is halachically innocuous, like the movement of a detached tail. Now, what did Rabbi Tendler do? So live and be well. We're good friends, even though we did debate this two times, 1 7 hours, 1 3 hours. So what he did is he said, we now have physical decapitation as an alternative to determining death. The person in the Gemara Yoma was a physical hole, but the various functionalities were determined with the tests that they did. Here we get chopping the head off. It seems Chazal compared chopping the head off to a person dying quickly and any other muscle movements of the body, cardiac or otherwise, nervous would be halachically irrelevant. So he developed a new interpretation of death, which he called physiological decapitation. If I could show and demonstrate that even though the head is still physically connected to the body, but the head no longer functions as a connected organism that controls the body below, it's physiologically decapitated. It doesn't control what's going on, just it's physically connected. Why should I care whether it's physically connected or not? Once our brain is no longer controlling what's going on below, it's as if it was decapitated physically, but instead of saying it's physically decapitated, we'll call it physiological decapitation, and therefore declare the person dead accordingly. And with that interpretation, he therefore declared brain dead patients, where the brain no longer controls what's happening below, as physiologically decapitated, equating it to physical decapitation, and therefore he accepted brain death accordingly the way he accepted. Now, what is interesting to note is that the question was posed to Rabbi Tendler, but how in the world, Rabbi Tendler, even though you've shown that a physical decapitated person is dead, so the fact of the matter is you want to equate that to physiological decapitation, but there's one big difference. When you physically, basically speaking, chop off a person's head, besides the fact that the brain's no longer functioning, you also cause a total disruption of the cardiac circulatory system, because a person brings out, they come to major veins and blood vessels in the neck itself. So the circulatory system stops, the brain has been disconnected, so there is an actuality stoppage of brain activity and cardiac activity with physical decapitation. The problem is a person who's brain dead, the only thing that stopped might be respiratory brain activity, but at the end of the day, the fact is that the cardiac system and the respiratory system is functioning, and that, according to many neurologists and neurosurgeons, they told me that can exist with the respiratory health for perhaps even a couple of weeks, even a couple of months. It can't go more than really a month or two because the body form just gives in because of the trauma. But the fact is, there is still a physical heartbeat in circulation. And in fact, not only that, but when a person is on a respirator, there's still body heat. There's still enzyme functions that are basically being coordinated by the brainstem, thalamus, hypothalamus, thalamus, hypothalamus. There are glandular impacts of the body below, from the endocrine system and such, so it seems that a person is declared brain dead, that the brain is not totally disconnected and detached from functionally medically controlling what's going on below. There are very various medical journals, I remember I read at that time when we were debating, that when they introduced this new system into the medical world, a lot of doctors were very uncomfortable, because he said the patient I saw last week, who basically might have been on a ventilator, who had body temperature, the color of the body was like a live human being, but he treated like a live entity. Now, based upon the new definition, I got to ignore all of that. I have to ignore the heart's beating and the circulatory system and the endocrine function and the body temperature gondola and declare them dead based upon a new definition. There were many doctors in the medical world that did not want to accept this and they felt uncomfortable with it. But nevertheless, the fact is, Nimru Lugamru, majority of the medical world, since they needed this earlier definition, they left it in place despite the fact that the Harvard Medical Journal and other medical journals said that the medical reality of total disconnection between the brain and the bottom of the body is not the medical reality of people to be brain dead. They kept it and they left it, and quite obviously speaking, it exists at Ayelazad as the alternative interpretation to death. Now, the interesting factor and why I said it's connected to Baba Basra is because of the following. There's a sugya Baba Basra, and the sugya starts on page 2 of the Magna Kamos. So the Daf Yemi Nikas of you didn't realize when they're learning the Daf this week, there was a little couple lines of the Daf that were used to point out a case. And with this, Allah Lamasa used an expression which is important. The Gemara on Daf page 2 quotes the following halacha from the Sefer Nida. It says, Rabbi Yisai, the following. Toshma, Tinik Ben Yom Echor Gogo Manchil Ben Yom Echor, Enuba Ba'avis, which the Gemara says that the fact of the matter is that when you have a baby that's one day old and his mother is about to die, he can inherit his mother if he dies after her, and manchil the Yerusha over to his paternal brothers. But he has to be alive in this world one day in order for this transfer Yerusha to take place. Ain't ubalot, but a baby in utero cannot accomplish this. Amar Rav Sheshes, he says, no chol v'nichse ein v'hanichlo achi v'na'av, the davka ben yom echad, only if the child's one day old, and it was a full-term birth, the child of being alive is able to be nachal his mami manchil to his paternal brothers. Av ubalo maikai, I turn the page to Rabbi Zayin. So on page number three, Gahai Mayas Baration. The assumption is the baby's in utero and the mother suffers natural death, the baby dies as Ubi Yerachiva before the mother dies. So if the mother's dead, the baby's dead. And what's the result? Eila ben Yerush is Ima Bekever. If the child's dead, he can't inherit his mother who died after him in the Kever to take the maternal things he inherited from Ami, Lahandachil, Lahachim, and Av, to give it to maternal brothers. The Mebra, to my inspiration. So the assumption is a woman who dies naturally, the babies inside die before her, and therefore Yerusha cannot be accomplished. So the Gemara says, what are you talking about? Abubta, we have cases recorded that after the mother died, and they tried to extract the baby, Havi Uva, who pierces plus up here from say, they saw the baby's body moving with all different types of convulsion movements after the mother was declared dead, showing that the baby outlives the mother. If the baby outlives the mother, he should be able to inherit the mother and therefore pass over the possessions to his paternal brothers. So the Gemara answers, Omar Marvashi, Midi Dahava, Azvana Haltoa Shemafarcheses. So the Gemara paraphrases the last phrase of the Mishnah Olaos, that Pirchos of the body of the baby that's taken out with automatic post-mortem cesarean surgery to save it, that's not an indication of life. It's like the tail of a lizard that has spasmodic movements. That's not an indicator of life. It's halachically innocuous. And in fact, the case, it doesn't render the baby outliving the mother. The assumption still is that the baby died first before the mother actually passed away. If she died a natural death, the Tosas on the side points out on top of the page that the Gemara in the Sefer Erechim says that's only if the mother dies a natural death. If the mother was decapitated and killed all of a sudden, and therefore if that's the case, it wasn't a automatic normal death, that there are cases that they were able to do a post-mortem extraction of the baby and the baby survived the mother. That's one case. Another case is once the baby has turned around in the womb and is about to exit, that in that case they found also, even though the mother died, might have died in pregnancy, the baby was found to be alive because at that juncture it's no longer the Yerachiva, it's a separate entity, and therefore the movements of the life of the baby is possible under those circumstances. That's the exception of the rule, but if the baby dies and the mother's normal death, normal circumstances, the baby dies before the mother. Now, and the movement of the Evarim are like detached tail. So this expression of the Mishnah Olos is used to say that autonomous musculospasm movements that are not part of an integrated human being no longer have halachic value. Comes along Rabbi Tendler. Rabbi Tendler said, if that's the case, he will say to me, it isn't the heart beating, it isn't the heart functioning after a person undergoes physical decapitation. If you take the heart out of the body and put it into a laboratory with proper ingredients over there, liquids, you can have the heart beating totally detached from the body, so it seems it has a musculospasmic capacity to imitate beating, even though it's no longer protected. And connected to a physical body, it's like a detached tail. So he wants to say that even if the heart's still connected in the body and it is beating, It's no better whether it's in the body, out of the body, since basically the head's been detached physically or physiologically, we ignore those spasmic movements as the pirchus described by the Mishnah Olos and the pirchus described by the Gemara Masechet Baba Basra. It's innocuous and an indicator of life, and therefore he accepted what he called physiological brain death based upon the death of the brain. That was the sequel of Rabbi Tamlin's basic approach to the topic itself. So the question is, what was the counter argument to that? What was the counter argument? So the major person who made the first major counter argument in writing, and there were many tshuvas written afterwards, was Rav David Blatt. And Rav David Blatt, what he said very simply is that there is a major difference between how it gets detached from the body, that no longer is integrated in the body system, no longer supporting the circulatory system, and no longer is functioning as a human functional type of entity, and the body is still showing. So in that case, to say that its muscle movements are similar to muscle movements of a totally detached heart is really not a closed linear. He says very simply, when you chop the head off a person, which is what the Gemara was talking about, what the Mishnah is talking about, it's not merely the fact that you killed the brain, but you basically caused the entire circulatory system to go awry, totally bleed out. So you destroy the circulatory system plus the brain system. And therefore, that is very similar to the Simone Misa of a Masechet Yoma, but it's being done by you automatically chopping a person's head off. The fact that a person is dead and the heart can still beat autonomously, unconnected to the circulatory, is a spasmodic movement like the tail of a lizard, but that cannot be compared to a heart in the body that's still integrated with the head still connected. There's no dinyan zebazah, and therefore you can't bring a riot from it. What is interesting to note is that Moshe Feinstein, Rav Penwith's father-in-law, was approached by Rav Moshe, and he was trying to prove to a shver that his interpretation of physiological decapitation should be compared to physical decapitation. And in the tshuva Rav Moshe will have on page number 5, this specific tshuva over here, and I'm pointing with my finger, was the tshuva where Rav Moshe and Rav Pendler had a discussion. The case that I want to show you over here, you see in the second paragraph of my finger is, because I want to save time, is the paragraph that describes the following mitzvahs. You had a person who was in an emergency car accident. The boy totally traumatized into the hospital because of the problems in their body being squashed, whatever it is. Their physical capacity to breathe autonomously has to be supplemented by a ventilator when they come into the hospital to give them a chance for the body to, basically speaking, perhaps be able to get back to itself. So the person is now breathing through a respirator. So as Larry Tedler said to his shver, that if we can show that this person is physiologically decapitated in this emergency room, while the Simon I just described, he should be declared dead through the blood test, because you can have blood tests that are basically based upon radioisotopes to show whether there's any blood flow going from the bottom torso of the body through the blood vessels to the head. If I can show that through radioisotope testing there's no longer any blood flow taking place to the brain cells are very sensitive to a lack of oxygen, and they don't have oxygen for a little period of time, they start to undergo deterioration, should be called lysis, from the location of the brain cells. And therefore, if I can show through this idea of this radioisotope test of the blood, there's no longer brain flow to the blood of this type of patient, he should be physically, physiologically decapitated as if his head was chopped off. That was what he said to Rav Moshe. So Rav Moshe, as being the gadol that he was, said the following. I want to read this with you, because this is the most crucial line in today's shir itself. So where it says, Rabbi Yisrael, when you see the asterisk, so he says the following. He's quoting his Eden. Kedishata omer, sha'ata ikin asayam. There is an extra test. Sharof, the Golden, the Cholim, the Vara, Ali, the Zrikas, Ezel, Achlukas, because that's radioisotope, a blood test. Ali, the Gidim, Leder, Shenifsak, Akesha, Sheyesh, Lemoach, to show that the brain, even though it's physically connected to the body, no longer functions as a connective control device to the body below. Shem Kol Aguf, Shem Lo Yovo, Zer, Lehamoach, you see there's no blood flow to the brain. It shows you that the brain can no longer have any type of control activity to the body below. The God and what does this indicate? That the mess's brain has totally deteriorated and liquefied entirely. And likewise, Rabbi says, if the head has been decapitated, even but you can rely upon this, ultimately speaking, there's no breathing, except for the head no longer connected to the body below, the person I'll make at that time, physiological decapitation similar to physical. But you have to realize what emotion said. I'll only accept it with two things. That the brain no longer controls the stomach that goes on below. And furthermore, he says, Shekavar Nir Kavu Gamri, that the brain has undergone total lysis. If you can show me that a person who is an accidentist has the brain no longer controlling anything below, on any level, and number two, that the brain cells have undergone total lysis, that I will create on a physiological level to physical decapitation, and I'll be masking you. Now, when Ramosha made that statement, he was therefore making a very powerful statement. I will only equate, therefore, physiological decapitation if the result of the physical is totally equivalent to when a person's head is chopped off. When a person's head is chopped off, Rabbi Sai, there's no question the brain has no control what happens on the body below. But obviously, since the head has been chopped off and the blood gets severed, there's surely no blood going to the brain cells, so it surely undergoes lysis immediately, within a couple of seconds to minutes, all the brain cells have died. So what basically Ramosha said is, if you can show me physical decapitation, physiological is similar to physical on a level, I'll be masking to allowing brain death to be alternative. The problem is, and this is the medical problem, all subsequent medical journals, there's the Harvard and all the other famous ones that exist, when after many, many months of analyzing brain death patients based upon this new system, admitted that their initial assumption that when a person becomes physiologically dysfunctional with their brain, that in actuality there's no longer connection between the brain and the body below on any level, and there's no longer blood flow, is really, on a medical level, incorrect. How do we know this? So they point out that, number one, body temperature is controlled by the brain stem. Endocrine function is controlled by the hypothalamus, because the hypothalamus gland contained in the brain stem. If you can still show that endocrine function, a person can do their brain, there's still body temperature, and there's still other stuff going on in the body below, which is controlled by the, brain stem, that is not what emotion masking is equivalent to physical decapitation. And if emotion was told that information, he would never have been a dhamma, physiological decapitation to physical decapitation. So Ramosha did not accept your interpretation of brain death, who are ignoring these phenomena, relying upon the medical community's only concern is respiration under control or not. And everybody agrees, when you're brain dead, the concept of your brain controlling respiration has ceased to exist. That's why some of the development of Israel didn't cause the physiological decapitation. They called it respiratory death, which is really the major function that I call brain dead, that a brain dead person does not have control upon anymore. So therefore, that's why the person felt that since the heart is functioning still, and the brain has now become totally dysfunctional, you can't equate the person who's physiologically decapitated or respiratory decapitated to the person who's lost all the three functions of brain, heart, Hashem is a bara, and therefore disqualifying this as halachic death, not allowing it to take place. The movement of the heart in the laboratory, they compare to a severed tail of a lizard, which has no indication of death, but that's when it's severed from a coordinated body, and is moving based upon the autonomous muscular movements, which we know the heart has. But when the heart is integrated into the body and a brain dead person, and it's still causing circulation, and the body's still functioning because of that heart, that is not similar to a severed tail. And then you just can't say it's pirchus bialma. And the dimya from the mission, the sefer olos, does not prove the thesis, and therefore does not support your specific sheet itself. And that's why categorically 99% of the person basically rejected. That's a very quick synopsis of a topic that could take hours to debate itself. Interesting, the Gemara Masechtas Bava Basra mentions that the Derech Agav is in Nimrods, and quite obviously shows you Pirchas B'Alba'i, but Pirchas B'Alba only means when you basically have nothing else left, and the movements of and the child has no heartbeat, the child has no brain activity, and might have autonomous movements of the feet or whatever it might be, that's like a chicken who's been decapitated, that we have reports that can run around the floor without the head based upon a certain autonomous muscle movement. We have 10 people here?
Yeah.
So we can have a minion in Amar. So therefore we're not Amar minion right now. So therefore that is basically Rabbi Isai what they compare this to. But Halach Lamasa at the end of the day, Rabbi Isai, we don't separate that for Halach Lamasa to be Masha this type of stuff. The Dimyonos are quoted Dimyonos. Pirchus of a detached heart from the body is not similar to the pirchus and the movement of heart to the coordinated body, and that's why we are mocking it. There are not Venus Halach Lamasa to look at the dying pregnancy, but Halach Lamasa, we should perform a post-mortem cesarean to save the child. In the time of Chazal, they didn't have machinery to detect the heartbeat of the baby, even if the mother declared dead. And that's why, since they felt they didn't have the ability to make that determination, they felt they were getting there too late and caused ultimately nibble MS of the cleft method. The same machinery where you can monitor the fetal heartbeat, even though the mother dies, we will do a postmortem cesarean to save the baby. Many times we're successful, but that's based upon modern technology, which was not available at the Chazal. This is a quick overview of the topic, Rabbi Isai. It's interesting, we learned that the Sefer Basra alludes to it. You have to see the whole picture to appreciate it's another teaching.
You have been listening to a presentation of Ben's Torah. .com